Jason Keyes, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. And it's time for the weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in their chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Allison. Hey, good to have you in the shop. How you doing, Chicago?
I'm good. I'm a little sad, but I'm good.
Right. fellas, what's good? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, good, man.
What's
good.
Cracking?
Well, all right. Well, there's some sad news this week. The tornado that hit Joplin, Missouri on Sunday. Now, death toll now past 130, and more than 230 people are still missing. At the same time, President Obama was starting a six-day tour through Europe. Now, of course, the president sent FEMA to the area and promised to provide any resources needed for recovery, but some critics say that the president should not be having tea and crumpets in England while people are trapped in the storm wreckage in Missouri, Allison.
Here's Fox Business host Eric Bolling on the timing of the trip.
Mr. Obama, you've decided that chugging a few 40s and rediscovering your Irish is more important than a presidential visit to a community trying to figure out what just hit them.
Is a Guinness 40 ounces?
Chugging
No. Obviously, it's his attempt at a frat boy humor / coded language. Thank you for that, Allison. You know, this is what I got to say. It's not a great look, but by the same token, it's not like President Obama's Superman, despite his campaign promises. Look, he's not going to wave a magic wand. I think he's overseas securing our interest abroad, and he already has a system here in place that works. You know, if he did hop on a plane or put on the cape and cowl and go over there to Joplin, Missouri, he'd be accused of grandstanding, I think. And I think he's handling this in the exact right way. Pablo, what do you think? Do you think the president should cut his trip short?
You know, I wasn't bothered by his decision. I mean, he's going on Sunday, right? It's not like he's
right.
You know what? You know, you guys are good. I'm going to do my own thing here.
Not like he's going on spring break or anything.
Right. I mean, it's a matter of priorities. I mean, God knows that the one thing in this situation the president isn't guilty of, or any president really, is insensitivity. I mean, at this point, every president knows that their decision is going to be criticized. So from the most cynical perspective, God knows they debated this, they thought about it, they put a lot of care into it. To me, the bigger and more abstract question is whether there's like a bright line or a criteria for when a president needs to sort of swoop in and make an appearance, which is ultimately almost purely symbolic and emotional anyway. Obviously, 9/11 is an obvious choice, for example, Katrina. But what's the test case? Not to minimize the horror in Joplin at all, but I'm just saying there's a sort of a slippery slope idea. At what point do we want him to show up? Is it 5 deaths, 100 deaths, 500? Do we vote? I mean, what happens? I mean, at some point, I have to trust the president to make sense of his own daily schedule, send the actual practical units, the FEMA and all that, to Joplin, and then go on his way, and then he'll deal with it on Sunday.
Ruben.
Well, listen, so let's talk about what this is really about. And one of the things that dies in D.C. is moral consistency, with situational ethics. My guy did it, but it was okay. Now your guy did it. Oh, it's not okay. This is Fox News's attempt to pay back the criticism of Bush over Katrina. That's what this is. And there is some validity to that, because the same arguments that we could have used, President Obama shouldn't rush back to Joplin because he'll be accused of grandstanding. Okay, they said that in defense of Bush and Katrina. Oh, he shouldn't rush to Joplin because he'll just be a distraction. He'll get in the way. They said that in defense of Bush. I think if you are of the opinion that George Bush blew the response to Katrina, and I am, it's very difficult then to turn around and say that Obama and his team handled this absolutely correctly. And Pablo, I think, was generous. He said, it's not great. And you were generous, Jimmy. You said, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look great. I think it's a little more than that. And I think the presidents are always going to run into this. But the big point here is we got to start playing the game by one set of rules. We got to make this an accurate comparison. If it was wrong for Bush to appear so detached, uncaring with regard to Katrina, it's just as wrong when Obama does it. Anybody who says otherwise is a hypocrite. They're playing the game by two sets of rules. They're giving their guy a pass when they went after the other guy, and that's what this is really about.
And there's also before Arsalan, sorry, Jimmy, but there's also the argument that isn't it part of the president's job to be there to comfort people right after a disaster? I mean, some of the people down there were pretty much like, as you said, he's drinking tea, he's formal dinner with the queen, and we are down here looking for our kids. Sorry, Arsalan, go.
It's okay. You know, the first thing that I want to address is chugging a 40, really? I mean, what other stereotypical trope was that Fox, you know, anchor going to say next, you know, eating watermelon with the queen? I mean, if it was George Bush, chugging a 40 would never have entered his collective consciousness.
Watermelon?
That being said, I actually lived in Missouri for 7 years of my life. I went to college and law school there. I've been to Joplin, Missouri many times. You know, my heart goes out to the people of Joplin, Missouri. I do think it's important, Ruben, to play by the same set of rules. But my pushback to you on that would be that during Katrina, we never saw any Fox anchors calling out President Bush for not showing up there on time. You know, this is political grandstanding. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, like you said, we have to play by one set of rules, but we also have to call out that same hypocrisy when we know for a fact that that same sort of calling out wasn't done in a previous presidential administration.
And this is Ruben. The reason we didn't see that on Fox News is because we heard on CNN, NPR, ABC, CBS, NBC, everywhere else, the criticism was there about Bush and Katrina. And so, yeah, I mean, people do that. I think we just have to get to a point where we don't just give our guy a pass. This didn't look good because, as Allison said, I think there is this kind of comforter-in-chief. Okay, comforter-in-chief. one of the things that helped, I think, save the Bill Clinton presidency was his response to the Oklahoma City bombing.
And his ability to feel publicly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gentlemen, you know, I have to jump in. I've got to jump in. You know, clock running. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly barbershop segment. We're joined by author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Alice. I want Ruben to finish that point tightly and quickly, and let's keep
Thanks
it in motion,
that.
Please.
I'll say this. Another time when a Republican didn't do so well was when Bush 41 was seen out in Kennebunkport on vacation during Hurricane Andrew, when Hurricane Andrew hit Miami.
That's right.
And there were people in Miami who said, "You're our president. You need to be here with us, not, you know, touring the world, not in other places." So again, it happens to both administrations. It does. It's inevitable that people are going to get this criticism. But there is a role to be played. I want to see my president down there hugging people, doing what he can, sleeves rolled up. Honestly, I don't want to see him having tea with the queen. It's not my thing.
Okay. All right. Well, I can dig that, and we'll keep that conversation flowing. But from problems in the Midwest to problems for the West Coast. Now, this week, the Supreme Court ordered California to shrink their prison population by 33,000 people. The court said the prisons are overcrowded and subjects inmates to cruel and unusual punishment. While the courts didn't specify exactly how it had to be done, the gist is, well, quit stalling. Yikes. You know, I'm getting shades of Oliver Stone's Scarface. You know, the Mario boat dealy. Yo, Ruben. Ruben.
That's how they refer to it in history, actually. Yeah,
exactly.
It's a Wikipedia page.
Right.
Here's my...
Go ahead, man.
Speaking from California, here's my thing, and I grew up in this state. I remember, and I said this in a column I wrote this week for CNN, I remember having this conversation in high school over, you know, are you going to debate in our government class gun control, abortion, or prison reform? We have been kicking this can down the road in California for 30 years at least, and it is not fair, I think, to blame the justices and the court system for doing to California, you know, putting up a mirror and saying you can't keep putting this off. You've got to fix this. You have capacity in the prisons that are at 200% of capacity. You have cells that were built, they're about 6 feet to 9 feet in dimension, by 9 feet in dimension, and they're meant for one prisoner, and you've got three in there. And it only gets bigger, and it gets bigger why? Because we in California do not want to have our taxes go up anymore. We're already overly taxed, severely overtaxed, and we don't want to pay more taxes for more prisons. Bigger than that, we don't want to put the prisons in our neighborhood. It's this whole NIMBY thing, not in my backyard, right? So there's no place to put the prisons. And so we continue not to build them, and the population goes up, and so we have this problem. And now we can blame the justices, we can blame everybody else and say, you know, it's somebody else's fault. But it's not. It's our fault. Californians brought this on themselves. We've knew this day was coming. And now we got to find some way in the next few weeks to come up with a plan. Our state officials are saying they're going to come up with a plan to present the federal courts that would say, we'll have something else to do. We'll have another way of getting at this problem without a mass release. We'll see how that flies, but, you know, it's up. You know, it was coming due, and it came due.
Well, and to
clear, A-Train, go ahead, man.
Thanks, Jimmy. You know, to clarify, it's not a mass release. You know, Antonin Scalia in his dissent, you know, talked about, quote, happy-go-lucky prisoners running free. This is basically sending the 33,000 overflow prisoners to city and county jails, local jails. So moving it from the state level and to the local and city level. So that first has to be made clear. You know, the Supreme Court case here, Brown v. Plata, you know, revolved around the Eighth Amendment constitutional right from protection against cruel and unusual punishment. And, you know, in addition to what Ruben said, you know, there were prisoners who literally died from this overcrowding, prisoners living literally in their own feces. Like, I mean, some pretty horrific stuff. And, you know, what has to happen now, the court has given California 2 years now to make this transition. And it's not about actually where to send them. They have prisons to send them to. It's the budget behind it. It's saying, how are we going to get the $100+ million in order to, you know, appropriate the funds necessary to move them? So, and let's not forget, California is also the, you know, the state with the ridiculous three strikes law.
And the huge budget crisis. Right. But I need to jump in and note that the plan to release them is costing hundreds of millions of dollars. It's supposed to pay for tax hikes. And there is always the question, okay, if they don't send them to other prisons or to federal prisons or send the undocumented immigrants someplace else, then some of these folk might end up on the street.
No, another alternative that they're suggesting is that they might send them to prisons in neighboring Arizona, Colorado, other places where they – because, you know, prisoners make – they make, you know, $50,000, $60,000 per prisoner. And right. So, you know, there is that there. So, I mean, again, this is not a sort of walking the streets, tough on crime issue. This is more of a budgetary issue on – yes, Ruben is absolutely right that, you know, this is a prison overcrowding has been a problem for over 30 years in California. Now, how do we remedy this in a way that's the most cost effective?
But if they don't fund this plan, what happens now?
It'll go to Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico.
But gentlemen,
no, I think the analysis is right. We don't know how it's going to turn out in this. We're full at the local level, too. I mean, those county jails are full. They don't want the prisoners either. They don't have room for them. So this is still to be continued. We're going to figure out how this is going to play out. Could be a bad thing, but it's, you know, it's time the Californians face up to it.
All right. Allison, did you have something you wanted to
I was only hoping that you were going to address the pain of two of the people sitting in the studio here and talk about some sports, man.
Got to talk about the Bulls. You know, we got to talk about last night's game. Chicago Bulls versus the Heat. We got some tape, maybe, right?
We got tape, Allison?
We do.
On the wing, throws up a prayer. And the ball taken by Miller. And that's the ball game. What a comeback for the Miami Heat. They'll advance to the NBA championship for the second time in franchise history. An unbelievable
comeback. Oh, man.
Wow, yeah.
That was
painful. Yep, the Miami Heat beat the Chicago Bulls last night 83-80. Not a trouncing, but this is what... those of us that have been watching LB, LeBron James, for his whole career, you know, this is what he's good at. He's good at the comeback. You know, fortunately for this young man, that he has the team to back him up, and he's not wearing the whole, you know, the whole scoreboard on his back. You know, I mean, he's
he's got Cleveland on his chest.
Right. Arsalan, Allison, were you guys crying last night?
Well, no. First of all, you know, the Bulls had a 12-point lead with 3 minutes. It's like, how are you going to blow a 12-point lead at home in a must-win situation? It's winner stay home.
And offensive rebounds.
And I think Pablo will agree with this also. You know, late in the third, early in the fourth, when Carlos Boozer threw this flagrant elbow into LeBron James's face. I think that woke
there were
up.
Eight. There were like, what, 8 free throws in a minute 10?
It was something
like that.
And then you had a 4-point play later with D. Wade. I mean, I think anybody outside the city of Miami is now rooting for the Dallas Mavericks, and we want you to go get your ring, Dirk. So,
well, look, if the big three on the Heat, LeBron, Wade, and Bosh, obviously, are scoring 69 of 83 points and they're winning, I mean, this is the blueprint that, to LeBron James's credit, he and those two other guys drew up, right? I mean, it was first off, championship or bust. That's what they said in their ridiculous preening to begin the season. And to their credit, they're there. They have their chance. And it looks like, honestly, I don't know who's going to stop those guys on the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, they have some players.
But somebody
Dirk
will.
Nowitzki. Dirk is great. He's not going to stop anybody. Right. Tyson Chandler is good. He'll throw some bodies around. But, Jesus, I mean, this is a team that was designed for a title, they're there, and it seems like an increasingly foregone conclusion that when those three players are firing in all cylinders, that they're going to get it. It's sad.
Really, really quickly before we go, Tiki Barber, the former NFL Giants player who is also trying to get back on the field, compared himself to Anne Frank this week. Yes, because he and his Jewish girlfriend moved into his agent's attic to avoid media scrutiny. He said they were living, quote, a reverse Anne Frank thing. Seriously,
oh,
fellas?
Oh, man.
You know, it's just not that hard to not make Holocaust allusions. Just don't do it. I mean, unless you're actually talking about the Holocaust, I feel like it's a fairly obvious rule that, a lot of people don't get, and Tiki Barber is just the latest to put his foot in his mouth. I don't think he's an anti-Semite by any means. He visited Israel, God for God's sakes, 5 years ago, I think, as a guest of the president, Shimon Peres. It's just one of those things where it's just the easel. It's the closest parallel, closest metaphor within reach, and people just got to stop reaching
for
it.
And you know, I'm going to have to give Barber the Come On Man Award of the Week because seriously, like I know your last name is Barber.
Is there a check with that? I need to know.
Listen, I know your last name
shows up at your house.
I know your last name is Barber, but you give barbershops around the country a bad name with that stuff. That was just bad taste. Let's not forget, he also left his wife while she was pregnant with twins. I mean, there's
all right. All right, wait, I've got to jump in. Ruben has been, I'm sorry. Sorry, Arsalan's been waiting to say that all day. Gotta go, gotta go. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book, The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from New York at NPR Studios. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. He joined us from San Diego. And Arsalan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of The Muslim Guy, and managing editor of The Crescent Post, right here in D.C. with me. Thank you, gentlemen, so much as always.
Go Mavericks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.
That's our program for today. I'm Allison Keyes, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.